This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, anywhere you look in West Asia today, where there is death, destruction, displacement, and instability, you will see U.S. and Israeli footprints all over it. Washington and Tel Aviv are partners in a genocide and ethnic cleansing campaign against the Palestinian people in Gaza. The ethnic cleansing and wide-scale annexation plan underway in the occupied West Bank, the occupation of Lebanese territory, and attacks against the people of Lebanon in violation of a ceasefire there, by the way. A regime change, occupation, looting resources, death and destruction, all in Syria. And let's not leave out attacks and aggression taking place against Yemen. All this U.S. and Israeli aggression in the region of West Asia is today's focus of our Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us, we have Mr. Ali Hamia, writer and political analyst, joining us from South Lebanon. And Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator at Samedin Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, joining us also from Lebanese capital, Beirut.
Is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the broadcast here. I guess we're going to start with you, Mr. Ali Hamia. Ali, your opening take on how exactly, or is Ali ready? Ali, are you ready? Okay. Your opening thoughts on how many nations in West Asia today are impacted by U.S.-Israeli plots, plans, and aggression. Okay, it seems like Ali is still doing his sound check. Ali, handle your sound check. Charlotte, we're going to start with you. Your initial thoughts, please. On D.C. and Tel Aviv's contributions to the instability and insecurity that we see today across West Asia.
Your region, everyone in the Arab and Iranian region is affected by the ongoing crimes and imperial adventures of the Zionist regime and its sponsor in the United States, as well as those of fellow imperialist powers. Obviously, we're seeing this ongoing genocide in occupied Palestine. We're seeing the ongoing assaults that are happening daily in Lebanon, violating and breaking the ceasefire with impunity. We've seen the destruction that has taken place and is continuing to take place in Syria. We're seeing the war threats against Iran. We're seeing decades of destabilization of Iraq. We're seeing, even in the Gulf countries which serve reactionary interests, the reason why we have the governments that are serving those reactionary interests is because they're being propped up by the United States. Look at countries like Jordan and Egypt that are engaged in a normalization process with the Zionist regime because of U.S. sponsorship. When we look at the north of Africa, we look at the Maghreb region, every aspect, whether that's pushing people towards normalization, whether that's creating internal division. And this is, of course, not to mention the ongoing war threats, aggressive posture towards Iran, and the attempt to deny Iran its own self-determination and future development, while also constantly seeking to create conflict between the Arab nation and the Iranian nation, when the fact is that both of them are facing U.S. imperialism and the Zionist project that's been implanted in the region. So the fact is that everybody across this region is being impacted by the United States and by the Zionist regime, and those impacts are uniformly negative. What we're seeing, this doesn't mean that there isn't strong resistance, because there is strong resistance in many, many of these countries to pursuing this kind of path of hegemony, domination, and destruction. And it's that resistance that's providing hope to the world, from the Palestinian fighters in Gaza carrying out an ambush on occupation soldiers today, to the ongoing strength and resilience of the resistance and its people in South Lebanon, who continue to stand firm despite the ongoing violations, to, of course, the nation of Iran, which continues to resist these threats, to, of course, the people, armed forces, government, and Ansarullah movement of Yemen, who have stood up in the face of the world and forced the United States to back down from its bombings and assaults. You know, there is tremendous resistance, but there is also tremendous destruction that's being created by these forces.
And great opening thoughts there. Thank you, Charlotte. Ali, thank you for your patience. Great to have you joining us as well. Ali Hamia here, joining us from South Lebanon. Ali, your opening thoughts on, and think about this question: how many nations, from your perspective, do you see in West Asia impacted today by United States and Israeli plans, plots, and aggression? And to Charlotte's point, it's not just West Asia. There are also, to her point, a lot of countries in Northern Africa also impacted, who are more geopolitically tied to the West Asian landscape than they are to African nations.
Thanks for having me with you. Greetings to all. I would like to start to say that from the West Asia, that now we are moving from military war field and deterrence to strategic deterrence with the United States. And we see whoever we will call it otherwise, then there is two axes now. We are talking about the resistance and the normalizations axis, or state of normalizations, including the Israeli entity. The United States wants to take this region back to the Cold War, and they want to concentrate on the Far East or the East Asia, detour or bypass war through India, or direct war economically wise or military wise. So the problem with the United States in the region, they could not finish the war against Yemen. They could not demolish Gaza. They could not finish or defeat Hezbollah in Lebanon. And also they have lack of military wise to attack Iran. That's why they want to go back to the date before 2023 or October 2023, because at that time United States had the superpower or upper hand to control the the water passes and also control the exportation of oil from the Arabian Peninsula. Now, the United States, after being not having the full power to defeat Yemen, by contrary, Yemen is winning the war by now, because they are talking about not only not a lack of, let's say, espionage or lack of intelligence. They also, they could not defeat Yemen by all the American almighty power through their carriers or by jets or even using the B-2 bombarder and also trying to intercept the Yemenis missiles through the laser dome. Up to now, they have no equality, you know, by measuring the standards of power between Yemen and United States. United States is using against Yemen the full power that they must use it against Russia or China. And now they want to take the region from the war within the West Asia to East Asia.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's kind of what I want to get. I kind of want to get an overview on the U.S. and Israeli policy for the region over the last, you know, 3 or 4 decades. And I know it's very tempting to get into specific details about the atrocities taking place in Syria, in Gaza, in Yemen, in Lebanon. But I'm trying to get a kind of an overview. Kate, if you could help me here, what are the U.S.-Israeli plans and plots for West Asia when we think of not just today, yesterday, with Iraq, with Afghanistan, with Syria, you know, the instability and insecurity that's been caused by these two entities for the last 3 or 4 decades, since the late 70s, early 80s in the region, to what end?
Well, it's important to be clear that really they want everyone and all of the people of this region to be weak and unable to define and determine their own future. They don't want even their allies and partners, they don't want to be strong. To this date, despite everything that has taken place in Syria over the past 5 months, they have not ended the sanctions on Syria. Syria is still under sanctions, and the Zionist regime continues to bomb Syria. So instead of saying, "Oh, now we have we've succeeded in our goals and we've been able to remove a government that we wanted to remove for a number of years," instead of sort of declaring victory in that sense and moving on, what we're seeing is quite the opposite, where there's just a continual attempt to make sure, for example, that the Syrian people will not be able to stand on their own 2 feet because of sanctions, because of a destruction of the military resources, because of, you know, this ongoing policy of destruction, division, this speculation about dividing up the land of Syria, attempts to create sectarian destruction and tension and violence. And this is the same strategy that we see repeated time and time again throughout the region. There's nothing new about what they're doing in Syria. I mean, what we are seeing that is quite striking is this level of genocide that they are carrying out against the Palestinian people, particularly in Gaza. This has been going on for 19 months. This is just yesterday, there were over 100 martyrs in just one day in Gaza because of the Zionist bombing, because of their mass targeting restaurants, targeting schools, targeting shelters, targeting refugee camps, and all of the weaponry that they're using to carry out these massacres and this slaughter was provided for them by the United States. And the part of this genocide is certainly the Zionist demand to remove the Palestinian people from all of Palestine, to attempt to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its indigenous people, the Palestinian people. But it's also intended to make they're attempting to destroy the resistance forces in the region, because it is the resistance forces in the region that represent the people's ability to determine their own future, to pursue justice, to pursue a meaningful future of dignity and humanity in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran, and throughout the entire region.
Thank you. And now, if U.S. and Israeli plots and plans for West Asia are completely, according to what you both have been alluding to, completely contradictory to what benefits the nations and the people of the region, then why are there governments in the region still feeding into supporting and submitting and complicit in U.S. and Tel Aviv's agenda?
Yeah, let me take it from a strategic point of view. Mm. Let's say the United States is concentrating on the fight against China by all means. The Israeli entity feels that when United States is concentrating on somewhere else beside them, West Asia, it will be ignored by full protection of United States. And let's say all what they did during the 3 years, from 3 years ago up to now, displacement did not work. Destroying the resistance did not work. Put the pressure or war of pressure did not work. Subjugation did not work. So they are trying now to jump over the obstacles and try to take back the region to Cold War. And this what mean in strategic way, they want to move from the military war to silent war. Silent war is to what they are doing inside Syria. Silent war is what's going on, putting pressure on Egypt economical-wise. Silent war is what's going on inside Jordan. Silent war is to put the pressure on the resistance in Lebanon through the government of Lebanon or through some kind of Zionist tools inside Lebanon. So now they are trying to make us fight against each other by silent war, because they know exactly if United States wants to go to East Asia, Israel will be left alone. And in this case, this is one of the signs that Israel will be defeated if United States goes into war directly or indirectly. What's what we see now in between India and Pakistan, and I think it will expand through China sooner or later, because this is the main goal. In this case, the Israelis will feel that they left alone, and it will move from military war again to try to penetrate the silent war, and it will be like war by directly by people.
Thank you, Ali. And Charlotte, how can the biggest issue for regional leaders and states today, beyond what you mentioned, this barbaric genocide against the Palestinian civilian population of Gaza, how is it not the fact that Israel is not just occupying Palestine with the Trump administration talking about permanent dispossession of Gaza, but the occupation also of southern Lebanon, the expanding occupation of Syria? Now, the Israeli apartheid regime is expanding its tentacles in every single direction with direct U.S. support, and the fact that this does not terrify every regional leader and state seems almost as worrisome as the fact that it's happening.
Well, the fact is it should, because it's very clear that it, and again, this is why I mentioned the example of Syria earlier, because it's very clear that simply achieving their goals in one form or another is not enough to stop the expansionist goal of particularly the current Zionist government. I mean, the Zionist project as a whole is an expansionist colonialist project that has aggressive aims toward the entire region as a whole. But what we're seeing is a complete mask-off moment in this government that's been formed with Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, where they're fundamentally trying and openly declaring their intention to colonize a large part of the region. The fact is, they're currently threatening to reoccupy and invade Sinai at the same time that Egypt, according to its normalization project with the Zionist regime, is participating in the blockade of Gaza. The fact is that if Egypt opened the Rafah crossing right now, there would be no possibility for this genocide to continue because they're using starvation as a weapon while there are thousands of trucks in Egypt of aid just waiting to enter Gaza. So it's completely in the hands of Egypt to stop this, to stop this attack right now, to provide real relief for the Palestinian population that is being denied food, basic medicines, caravans, tents, and other like essentials of human life. But the reality is that Egypt, as the second largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid after the Zionist Project, is main, the government, those in power, not the people. The government and those in power are maintaining their power due to their relationship with the United States. And that means not having a national army that defends the people of Egypt. It means converting the national army into a security force that works to repress the Egyptian people to prevent them from taking action against Zionism and imperialism. And we're seeing this throughout, we're seeing this kind of thing throughout the region in what Ali called the axis of normalization. And this is something that we're seeing, you know, throughout the region, where we're seeing national armies that are not based on defending the land and the rights of the people, but national armies that have been transformed into security forces to police the people for the interests of Zionism and imperialism. So the fact is, unfortunately, that many of these governments derive their power not from the support of the people and not from a project that's based on uplifting and determining a future for themselves and for their people, that's based on self-determination and human dignity and common values of justice and morality, but are basing their power on weaponry bought from the United States and serving the interests of imperialism. Oh. And so, you know, this is a reality that that all the forces of resistance are confronting today.
Man, Ali, I'd like you to basically elaborate and weigh in on the same exact question. How has the U.S. is really expansionist occupation agenda as of late not prompted regional leaders into action? We have Jordan, Egypt, the Saudis, the Emiratis, Turkey, and even Iraq. Do any of them think that this policy and this aggression will never touch them, that they're exempt as long as they play to some tune, to some extent, Washington and Tel Aviv's tune?
Let me start from the beginning to say that the U.S. is now given a limited extra time to the Israeli entity in order to finish what they can finish inside Lebanon or against Gaza, or to now, because they postponed, they informed Israel that sanctuary deal number two is out of question right now, and annexing West Bank is out of reach, and they should postpone also the Abraham Accord or the expansion of the normalizations with the Arab countries around. So I think now, who's dragging who inside? Who wants the area to be stable in order to let flow the oil from the region? Who wants to let this area be more stable just for their own interest and the benefit? I think there is contradictions between the benefit now, between the interest of United States and the interest of the Israelis in the region. The Israelis wants to drag all the time that America will stay in the region having war on behalf of Israel, and they don't want the United States to leave the area. And exactly, they know, the American, that this is not for their benefit, because by 2027 they know that China will pass the United States by way by miles in technology and in economic wise. So the problem is now, who will listen to who, and what's going on between the United States or the administration of Donald Trump, and personally between Donald Trump and Netanyahu? Who will win now to drag who into what the other one?
Interesting take, and we barely have any time. Charlotte, I'm going to get this last question out to you. What type of security situation do you envisage for West Asia region in the future, especially if the status quo persists?
Well, the status quo can't persist. And there's two choices for the region. There's one of destruction, genocide, domination, and exploitation by the United States and the Zionist regime. And then there's the future presented by the resistance. And that's the future that presents hope for humanity and hope for the world. That is a future that is based on self-determination of peoples, that is based on independent development, that is based on human dignity, and that is based on a commitment to justice, to fighting oppression, and to developing a future and a society that's worth living in. And so every day when we see an achievement, an accomplishment by the resistance, when we see Yemen defeating the United States, when we see with every operation that takes place in Palestine and with every victory scored for the resistance, this is actually a defense of the future of humanity.
Interesting stuff. Thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe. To both of you, Ali Hamia there joining us from South Lebanon, and Shara the Cates joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ali baytihi al-tayyibin al-tahirin. Brothers, sisters, listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi. Previously, we were discussing prisoners and the right of prisoners. We mentioned that prisoners should not be held in prison for accusation more than 6 days. And once the retribution or the punishment has been done, they should not remain in jail, which obviously these two go right against the laws that we deal with today, which are not Islamic in their nature. Another guideline the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam draw in terms of dealing with the prisoners is that you cannot keep them in prison after discovering the truth. So, for example, a person is accused of a crime and we find the evidence that the person has committed this crime. Therefore, we have no right to keep that person in jail for any longer. What must be done is that the laws, retributions or punishments needs to apply to him, and that would be the end of it. You cannot say, yeah, we know what he did, we know what the punishment is, but we're just going to keep him in jail for no good reason. That can't happen. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, imprisoning a person after knowing the truth is a form of oppression. In fact, it is an oppression. If we know what he committed, we know what he did, we have an evidence on what he did, then punishment need to be applied. If we don't do that, what seems to happen is that sometimes we know someone is guilty of something, but we drag it for a year, 2 years. And then these guys will find a loophole in the system. And then they will prove themselves innocent. And they go free when they have committed an act of murder, for example. Recently, 6 months ago or so, a woman was accused of killing her husband. The police had evidence of her bringing a hitman, and she was accessory to murder, and she ordered the killing of her husband. And they have clear evidence from security footage and the evidence given by her daughter herself and the man who killed her husband. He said she done it. They have the messages, the videos, everything. And the law has prolonged the imprisonment for over a year. And this lady, she managed to find a way to get out of it. And she got out of it free. And now, not only she got out of free, but now she's suing the family of her husband for keeping her in prison. She wants money to be paid to her for damages. So this is what happens. So the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam saying, no, once you have an evidence that a person has committed a certain crime, then punishment is due. Do not keep them for a day longer. Apply the rules and the laws. And that could save the system plenty of time, plenty of money, plenty of space. Because when we look at the laws today, and especially when prisons are full of people who we know what they did. They have evidence on what they did, but the government's keeping them in prisons. You need to apply the laws to them. The same time you find out and you have clear evidence that they committed the crime, so you don't end up paying too much money to keep them in prisons or maintain them, which is quite ridiculous if you ask me. Now, let's take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. Now we are discussing the rights of prisoners. Among the rights of prisoners that the Ahl al-Bayt alayhim as-salam speak about is that when you have people in prison, they need to go out from time to time and smell the fresh air. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi said, when he spoke to the chiefs of the prisons that he had, the prisoners that you have, at night, take them out to the courts of the prison and let them get fresh air. Let them see the night. Yes, they are criminals. Yes, they have committed a crime. But it doesn't mean that we treat them badly. You still need to give them time to breathe and to see the skies and what have you. Now, obviously, a lot of prisons these days have this notion of courtyards where they let the prisoners out, unless you are in solitary, and then obviously you're doomed for whatever time you are serving. So this is a notion in Islam that prisoners need to be given time out from their cells to smell the fresh air and look at the sky night. Among the things that the Ahl al-Bayt alayhim as-salam, they spoke about when it comes to prisoners, is that they used to give them breaks to go to their houses, to their families. They used to give them time off. Because these prisoners, at the end of the day, they have families, they have wives, mothers, fathers, children. They need to be given time to visit these people, and instead of these people visiting them, which we don't see happening these days, unless you're on bail. But that's not how it should be. Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhi, when he talks about Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says kana yukhrij ahl as-sijn min habsin fi daynin aw tuhmatin ila al-jum'ah. The people that have been imprisoned for debt, for example, or they've been accused for a week, because we said after a week they need to be freed. فَيَشْهَدُونَهَا وَيَضَمُّونَهُمْ. He said, فَيَشْهَدُونَهَا وَيَضَمِّنَهُمْ أَوْلِيَهُمْ حَتَّى يُرُدُّهُمْ. What the Imam does, he says, okay, we will let them come to you, we'll let them see you under one condition. You become accountable for them. That if they flee, if they're in a way, you will be taking their place. You have to be the guarantor that these people will go back to prison. I mean, this is very similar to the concept of bail. When a person goes on bail, he has to put an amount of money, someone has to bail him out, and you will be responsible for him. Which seems to be a very easy way of trying not to put too much pressure on the prison system and on the government itself. So the Ahl Bayt Salamullah, they were saying, yeah, sure, give them a break. Let them go to their families. Let them see their wives, their mothers, their fathers. They could have businesses. They could have whatever. Have a guarantor that guarantees their safety, or at least their return to prison safely. And if they fail to, then these people will be held accountable.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
You're not aware that we're aware of your despair. Don't show your tears to your oppressor. Don't show your tears. Try not to cry.
David slew Goliath, this very same place that we be at. Passing through the Santa times, this land been a victim of countless crimes. From crusaders, mongers, to the present aggression. Then the Franks, now even a cruel oppression. If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say. For me in this path that I walk on, there's only one way. Bullets may kill, bones may break. Still I throw stones like David before me, and I say,
try not to cry.
No pierdas la fe, la sé, la calma el que hace. Agua de la arena, y tú que te levantas con orgullo entre las piedras. Has hecho mares de este polvo.
Yeah. I throw stones at my eyes. For too long they've been dry. Plus they see what they shouldn't from oppressed babies to thighs. I throw stones at my tongue, cause shit should really keep its peace. I throw stones at my feet, cause they stray and lead to defeat. Couple of big ones at my heart, cause the thing is freezing cold. But my nub's still alive and kicking, unstoppable on a roll. I throw bricks at the devil, so I'll be sure to hit him. But first at the man in the mirror, so I can chase out the venom.
Little boy, shining ahead. Just another kiss and out to get some bread. Not the first murder, nor the last. Again and again, a repetition of the past.
Since the very first day, same story.
Young ones, old ones, some glory. How can it be? Has the whole world turned blind? Or is it just cause it's only affecting my kind? If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say? For me, this path that I walk on, there's only one way.
Bones may kill, bones may break. Instead of those stones, like David, I say.
Bullets may kill, bones may break. Instead of those stones, like David, I say.
Try not to cry.
Continue our journey through the province of Charmahal Bakhtiari. We've set our sights on two villages that we've been told can thrill any traveler. But before we were able to dive into the architectural world of the villages of our choice, we came across a very beautiful pond 23 kilometers from Shahr Kord, located in the entertainment complex of Gerdabi Ben, or Ben's Whirlpool, that's set to have an area of 38,000 square kilometers. The beautiful scenery and the sunshine reflected off the surface of the water were so tempting that we decided to take a few turns on the paddle boats. One of the things we all enjoy during the summer is a day out with family and friends. You can pack a picnic lunch, get out your favorite blanket and a couple of fun games, and spend the day outdoors. And there are a lot of places in the city of Ben, in Charmahal and Bakhtiari, where people do exactly that. With fully recharged batteries after our little fun detour on the pond, we set out towards our first destination, a remote village in the central Zagros Highlands. We have some 150 kilometers ahead of us before we reach the village of Saragha Seyyed. To get to the Saragha Seyyed village, you have to go past Kuhran County through a long and winding dirt road. The Saragha Seyyed village from afar, you think you were looking at beautiful stairways going up the side of the mountain. This kind of compact housing formation where your door opens onto the roof of the house that's right below you is rarely seen in Iran.
only a handful, and this is one of them. Apart from the amazing view, the upside to this interesting architecture is that everyone can have their own patio.
It's as though time stopped in this village at some point, for the architecture is still very similar to its original style, an architecture that's unique in the rural and urban context of the Bakhtiari settlements. Even so, the passage of the years has left its mark on the face of this village, on the houses that were built a few hundred years ago. I don't believe any of the images we show you can truly portray this scenery and the villagers' way of life. Our next destination is a village that's in the northeastern part of Charmaholo Bakhtiari, a village in the mountainous areas of the county of Saman along the riverbanks of Zoyanderud.
Yasir Chah is a village that was built in the mountains during the Safavid era, so it's really old. The houses are built from clay, wood and brick, and some of the streets and alleys are still covered.
The name of the Yasir Chah village is derived from its geographical location. Most of the villagers speak the Turkish dialect, and in Turkish, Yasir Chah refers to a part of the river that's wider than the rest. The houses are heartwarmingly simple. Luckily, because of the interest tourists have shown in such places, most of the houses are being restored while keeping their original historic and old texture, turning some of them into eco-tourism resorts. These historic and far-flung villages can entice any traveller. The calming experience of this adventure is hard to let go indeed. Hard as it is, nevertheless, we have to head back home. This is Gulnar Farnoodi for Iran.
Qazvin is located next to one of Iran's main north-south transit corridors. Many people driving along this road also pay a visit to this historic city. And one of the reasons is to eat. So my curiosity dragged me all the way to downtown Qazvin to find out more about food culture in this city.
It is time to get ready for a festival of color and flavor. Everyone's invited. In the city's historic caravanserai lies a kitchen where they turn ingredients into magic. If there is one place you should forget about your diet, it would be right here.
If you're on a gastronomic journey across Iran, you would easily be able to find Iran's national dishes in every restaurant on your way. But to get a taste of more folklore food, sometimes you have to travel to particular areas of the country, such as Qazvin City. That is where I am right now, in one of its traditional restaurants. I suggest we take a look into the kitchen to see what Qazvini cuisine is all about.
Traditional Qazvini foods are made of some of the best ingredients in the world. It's a pity we can't show you the whole process of preparing all these dishes due to our short program. Only looking at each dish is enough to awaken that dragon in your belly.
In addition to exclusive dishes, the people in this city pay a lot of attention to what they drink. That's why traditional drinks made of herbs and seeds are extremely popular here. We're going to try one of the best cafes in town to see how the people in Qazvin cool down and relax, especially in a hot summer day like this.
In the old times, bathing had its own traditions. One of them was to treat yourself with traditional drinks called sharbat and brewed herbs after you came out of the bath. That was when the owner of the sharbat house prescribed you a drink that would help you shape up after a long bath. He did this by simply looking at the color of your face.
Our journey would not be complete without tasting the very special sweets and pastries of Qazvin city, baklava or baklava. It's a bomb of energy and happiness, the richest and the most outstanding edible souvenir of Qazvin city. I'm going to have one, and then we're going to see how it's made.
To the people in Qazvin, baklava is pride. It is so important that no visitor leaves the city without it. In every corner of this country, you're guaranteed a warm and friendly hospitality. Iran, the land of endless flavors and new experiences. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Thank you. Desde el corazón de Asia Occidental, la hora de Irán te sumerge en el mundo persa. Conocerás su cultura y posición en el mundo.
Hola, queridos oyentes. Bienvenidos a una nueva emisión de La Hora de Irán. Es un placer estar con ustedes. Bueno, como siempre agradecemos a todos los que nos siguen en cada programa y a quienes se unen por primera vez. Así que no se despeguen de la radio. Para empezar, escucharán una conversación que aborda temas interesantes sobre Irán. Esta vez, en una interesante tertulia abordan variados temas sobre Irán, como su idioma, milenaria cultura. Así que vamos a escucharlos.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. En el nombre de Dios, el misericordioso, el clemente. Muy buenas tardes, queridos amigos de habla hispana.